Okay, let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we come to you again, ask for more grace, more peace, understanding, love from you, God. I pray for inspiration, for courage for all of us in this age to live godly lives towards you as your servants have in the past, that we can receive life, find our way through the path that you set before us as individuals and as church, as your children, that we are able to walk the path that you have for us and fulfill the responsibilities and duties for you and for our fellow men, that we can walk those things out, fulfill your plan in the big and in the small, in the daily life, that we are conscious of you and walking with you. Pray would help us to do that, God, every day of our life, that we can be conscious of you with our walk. Give us courage and inspiration, Lord. Me, everyone, speak to all of our hearts in a way that carries to eternity, that you would kindle and burn in us every day. May your will be done, God. We ask for grace again in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, I'd like to talk about very simply living a Godward life. Maybe a subtitle would be Men or Women That God Marks. Men or Women That God Marks. And we've talked, quite a few of the things that I want to talk about have come up already today. Some of the quotes, some of the men, some of the instances. So not necessarily new, but just focusing on them to encourage us as we go through the life. So men or women that God marks. So when God chose whose lives he was going to record in the Bible to stand for thousands of years and through eternity, his word, for examples of who to look to and how they did, who he chose to mark, who did he choose through the course of time? Because these stories that we read, some of them were hundreds or thousands of years apart, but they're still woven through with a thread. They had nothing to do with each other per se, with the situations or even the times or the places, but there's a common theme that solidly links them together, and that's why they're in the Bible. So if you think of Job, he was quoted today, and his outlook towards life and what he went through. I listened through the book a while back, a week or two ago, and it is astounding of what a man went through, and basically his heart through it all, through the confusion and the doubt, and who am I, and where is God, and what did I do, and refuting his friends, think they were that. His attitude was, though he slay me, yet will I trust him, through all of that. And then Noah, just mentioned him, his building and salvation of those eight souls, Abraham, who left his country and journeyed, Moses, who was an unlikely leader but led millions of people, David, who was ordained to be king, anointed, and ran like a dog in the hills away from the one he was supposed to take the place of, Caleb, Elijah, Elisha, Samuel, the prophet, the apostle Paul, thinking of what they faced in their practical daily life and what was overarching that. Jeremiah, if you read some of the things he did with his prophesying, it was very practical. And the Lord told him to lay on his side for two or three times for X number of years, I think. And what he would respond to the people when they said it. And then Peter, Joseph was mentioned today, Gideon. They're amazing, amazing men that God chose to I think, honor in his word. But the thing that they all had in common, we find some of them in Hebrews 11. Read there for a minute. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders, and I think the men that we read here would be in that, the elders obtained a good report. And verse 6 here, without faith, it is impossible to please him. And these men were full of faith, and they well pleased God. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, God is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So the mark of all of these men were that they sought God and lived before God. Invisible. This is the key here. Basically, my message summed up is this. Their visible lives, their outward visible lives that men saw, were marked and directed by an unseen reality. So they lived their visible lives by an unseen reality for all of these men. So from the outward, they would have had counterparts. In some cases, we read about them where they were mocked and said, basically, come back to earth. What you're doing is nonsense. They maybe didn't say the words, maybe we'd say it, crazy. Noah, imagine what he faced. But he looked to a reality, or he was guided by and directed by an unseen reality in his visible life. If you think of them, Job, Noah, Abraham, Moses, David, they all lived or looked to and were directed by an unseen reality in their visible life. And that's what I'd like to talk about today. So in light of all this, when we come to daily ordinary things, the question will come up, who do we want to be? Do we want to be living Godward lives, or like these men's counterparts, a lot of them were just earthy and forgot to see, or didn't believe, or didn't put their faith in a God that said these things that these men were living by. And these men put their faith in that and their outward walk and had the end that they did. So I'd just like to look at a few of them here, be fairly simple. If we look at Moses, for example, we'll go there, in Moses in Exodus 17. And again, there's many, many I could talk of, but I'll just pick a few for illustration's sake. So in Exodus 17, we have Moses, where God did many wonderful things with them. This is one of them. So in Exodus 17, where shall I break in? Let's start at the beginning. And all the congregation and the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the commandment of the Lord and pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses and saying, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, why chide you with me? Wherefore do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is it that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst? And Moses cried to the Lord, saying, what shall I do unto these people? They be almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people, and take with thee the elders of Israel and thy rod, wherewith thou smotest the river, take in thine hand, and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of it, that the people may drink. So they were ready to stone him. He takes the staff when they crossed the river, and he said, hit the rock. And Moses knew God, and we have the outcome, but there in the heat, with the people clamoring and all the noise, it was a very faith-filled thing to do, to take the rock just like God said, and hit it. And we get the outcome, and yes, there was water, and the people were happy, and it's all good. But look at it from Moses' perspective. He's walking up to a bare rock face with a rod that he's holding in his hand, and he's hitting it because God said. And then because he does that ordinary thing, water comes out. It'd be interesting if one of us would experience one of these things and how that would, like Moses had a life full of it. And he must have often looked back and said, when God did this and when God did that, then that's why Moses or God was often hard on them, or he was unhappy with them, because God said, how many times did I, when he did these things. But think of what happened here. He smote a rock and water came out. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah. And Meribah, because the chiding of the children of Israel, because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? So God delivered here again. And then Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men, go out fight with Amalek, and tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So it's the rod again. And Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses and Aaron and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. So you have a bloody battle going on in the valley, so to speak. I don't know how far it was, but they were up on a hill. And you have this bloody battle going on. And it wasn't that they were playing cards or prisoner's base. We have people with swords and spears at each other. So when it says that Amalek prevailed, it was a real earthy, probably bloody battle. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him. So he sat down, and he sat thereon, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua, mark this man here, and Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And Amalek comes up quite a few times, but as a side note here. So this earthy battle was going on underneath, and it was won by somebody on a mountaintop praying. And Joshua was part of that. He was down there. He saw the battle go his way and then go the other way by how Moses was doing. And think of what that would do to Joshua. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. So God is saying, Moses, write this down and tell Joshua these things. For I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Remember this for later on here, where God says, Moses, tell Joshua this often. And Moses built an altar and called the name Jehovah Nissi, for he said, because the Lord had sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek for generation to generation. And incidentally, Joshua is the one that later on fights the Amalekites quite a few times, but we'll read about another battle later on. But here he says, tell Joshua he's going to need this information. God will not reconcile, or I think more specifically, Amalek will not reconcile with God. They will be your enemies. It'll come up again. Joshua, remember this day when we won here by prayer. So they won the battle by praying, which was to the Amalekites. Think of how that would feel if you were on the winning side and you see this man's hands going up again and the battle goes against you again, what that would feel like to the Amalekites. You would think at that point they would bow because there's something bigger going on, but they don't give up. They continue their ways. So going to Numbers 13 for another example. Numbers 13, 17. All right, and Numbers 13. So we have the 12 spies going out here that went out to check the land out that God had said he would give them. God said in verse 2, send thou men that they may search the land of Canaan, which I give. God said, I'll give it to you unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers ye shall send a man, every one a ruler among them. And as you go through the list here, that Joshua is actually not in the list of men that went out. In verse 8, it says, of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea, the son of Nun. And then further on, it says that God changed the name of Oshea, the son of Nun, to Joshua. So God changed his name, or Moses changed his name there. But in the list, he's listed as, of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea, the son of Nun. And he sends them out, and among those 12 were Caleb and Jonathan. And these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Oshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said unto them, get you up this way southward, go up into the mountain and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwell therein, and whether they be strong or weak or few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what land it is, whether it be fat or lean, or whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time was at the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob as the men came to Hamah. And they ascended by the south and came unto Hebron where Ahiman, Shishai, and I'll skip forward there, and they came to the brook. They cut down grapes and they were so heavy that they bear them between two. They didn't take a cluster. They had so many that they hung them up. They hung them up between them on a staff and carried them back with two men, and brought pomegranates and figs. And they returned from the searching of the land after 40 days, and they went and came to Moses and Aaron, to all the congregation of the children of Israel. And I'd like to go back here of what we started with when they said, search out the land of Canaan, which I give unto you. That was how they started. That was the mandate they were given. Search the land, which I will give you. And they went and came to Moses and Aaron, and all the congregation of the children of Israel, into the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them, and spake unto the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, we came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth in milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So they said, it's great. It's an amazing land. This land that God moved Abraham way back when God said, Abraham, journey, look for the city. I have one for you. Trust me. Just go. This is it. You should see those grapes and pomegranates. Look what we brought. And it's an amazing land. It's full of woods and forest and rich. It's all there. Just all that God said, it's there. But this phrase here, nevertheless. So they said, yes, it's all of that. But nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. And the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And those were giants. In verse 33, it talks of that they were the sons which come from the giants. And we're as grasshoppers later on. But so they said yes to all of that. It's true. But the counter perspective, back to earth here, it's not going to work. And 10 men had this perspective. It's good. It's all that we hoped it would be. It's not barren. It'll easily support us. It's an amazing land. Nevertheless, the people be strong. So even though we're here, we're at the border, that's it. What do? We can't go in. The people be strong that dwell in the land. The cities are walled and very great, and moreover, the children of Anak are there. Giants. Not happening. And they were very sure about it. And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. So they said yes to your wonderful heavenly vision, but back to earth here, it's not happening. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, against all of this, Caleb is the single voice here that says, let us go up at once against all of this and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. So Caleb saw this too. He saw the walled cities. He saw the people. He saw the giants. But Caleb saw their mandate, which I give unto the children of Israel. He saw that. And he looked at that. And he didn't focus or didn't dwell on the earthy things. And Caleb had his way. Caleb was the way through. He had the reality. And again, Caleb knew what it meant to fight and to war. He didn't. He knew that they wouldn't be walking in. Caleb knew it could cost him his life. But the outcome would be that they had the land. And Caleb was willing to be that, expendable, so to speak. We're going to move forward. I might die in the battle. That's what battles are. But my children shall have it. I'm going to go in there because God said it will happen, whether I die or not, forward. But the men that went up with him said, we be not able to go up against the people. They're stronger than we. So Caleb, what's with you? You can't say that. We were there. We saw it. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, the land which we have gone to search is the land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And the people where we saw are men of great stature. And there we saw giants, the son of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight were grasshoppers, so were we in the sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. So we've come all this way through this wandering and years and years and years, and the Red Sea and the wilderness and hunger and desert storms, and we're here and we can't do it. They were ready to go back. They said, let us make a captain and let us return unto Egypt. This is a nowhere street. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their face before all the assembly, the congregation of the children of Israel. So Moses is responsible. He led them here. And then Joshua rises up here and joins Caleb. So this is where Joshua enters again. And Joshua, the son of Nun, he was quiet before, but he rises up here. Caleb, the son of the Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. And they spake unto the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. And if the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us. Again, the key here again, he will give it us. So whether we fight and whatever happens, we move forward into it because God said we will have it. Fear them not. And again, all the congregation bade them stone them with stones. So they've got two very different viewpoints here again. And I'm stressing that because both viewpoints were valid. One was God's viewpoint and one was the earthly viewpoint with eyes. And they were that. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long will this people provoke me? How long will it be ere they believe me for all the signs which I've showed unto them? And then later on he says, he talks of what he will do. And he eventually says that they're not going in. Though they see what they see, and they see the walls and the giants, they should see me. What I've been with them. I've done all of this. Look to me. Trust me. And then he's very pleased. He says, my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit within him and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land wherewith he went, and his seed shall possess it. So Caleb, though he saw what he saw, walked in the reality of God, and he's here in the book marked as a man that did that. So when I said earlier, what kind of man or woman do we want to be? It's going to take that. When we see with earthly eyes and it looks this way, but we see with God's viewpoint and it's this way, and we're able to walk into a battle or whatever it might be because God is there and because God said, those are the men that God marks. And just as a side note, it says the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwell in the valley. Tomorrow I'll turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. So the Amalekites who Joshua fought with back on the hill when Moses was praying, it's the same people and they're fighting again. And then for another example, in Numbers 24, no, sorry, we just read that here. Okay. So going to Joseph, I mentioned this on the last time I was here sharing. And it came up today again, but I'll look at it anyways. Genesis 39:9, for Joseph's life and his responses. Genesis 39:9. And Joseph was also a man that he faced tremendous earthly hindrances, but he was able to look to God. So Genesis 39, in his temptation, and listening to a message on Rabbi Zacharias and his perspective on this, and Joseph, a man that God marks, Joseph's response, he was by himself, and again, we've often heard this, but it's an amazing account. He was by himself, away from his people, away from his religion, away from accountability, away from here's the way of worship, and he was probably surrounded by immorality, and he could have had very different perspectives on this, but he kept his faith. And when he was tempted here, and it was many, many times over, day by day it says, but this is his response. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither had he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. And then he says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So he was saying, marriage is marriage. It's one man, one woman. You're married. Your husband is my master. But beyond all of that, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? That was the reality that he was looking at. So it's not about you, it's not about me even, it's about what God said. There's a bigger reality here than how we feel about each other, how you feel about me, or anything else. It's how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And that was how he lived. And it was evident all through his life until the end of it. And in Genesis 45, as it was mentioned before as well, words that have blessed me many times. Genesis 45, when Joseph reveals who he was to his brothers, he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. He was so overcome. So it must have been very dear to him. And Joseph said to his brethren, come near me, and I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourself that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. It's an amazing perspective considering he went to prison. And if you think of the how he could have often been, bumped back into this world. I'll say it that way. When he could have been knocked back into this world. Think of the sound of the prison door behind him as he's thrown into prison for being upright. Okay, God, I've kept my outlook towards you. God, you surely have a good plan in this. Nothing's happening, but I'm in Egypt. I've been sold. All of these things transpired, and I've been upright. I've been a good steward. I've even prospered this house. I'm benefiting people. And here he's falsely accused for being upright and thrown into prison, and the door slams behind him. And it was a few years of prison. Was prison back then. It wasn't a hotel like they have now. But there probably would have been mice and lice and nasties. And through that, the perspective was that God is, and he kept it through all of that. And here he doesn't mention any of those things, though he knew of them. They were obviously part of who he was, but he doesn't talk about it, and it doesn't come up. What he talks about is this: God sent me before you to preserve life. It's almost like he's consumable, and that's a challenge for me. It's almost like he's consumable. God, do with me what you want. I'll be your pawn. I'll go through years of prison. I can be a slave. I can be sold. I can be separated from family. But God had his purpose. And it's not cold. It's just such a different, huge, vast viewpoint that God has versus our small one. And Joseph was okay with that. And I love that perspective.